Hi, everyone. Welcome to Second Wind Women. I'm Karen Spies, and I am here today with Kate Tarat Tarratcross. She is a multifaceted wellness practitioner dedicated to inspiring healthy living and empowering individuals to step into a life of vitality and personal growth. Sounds amazing. She's also known as the Breath Chef, and she champions a powerful philosophy that food and air are the two essential life forces that fuel ourselves. And when we master both, we can elevate our energy and unlock the life we truly desire. She is on a mission to turn this philosophy into a movement. Okay. Here's a little bit of her history. Her journey has taken her from Haiti, where she spent a decade running a community-based art center, sailing the seas on a record-breaking luxury sailing yacht, to the high-performance world of elite sport. I cannot wait to talk to you. This is some very interesting stuff. All through those, she has nourished a world-famous athlete at the top of his game. These contrasting experiences have shaped her grounded yet high-performance approach to well-being. That's a little bit different than just like life of vitality and personal growth, right? So today she blends her roles as a retreat facilitator, soma breathwork instructor, health coach, artist, and chef to craft immersive retreats across Europe and Scotland. Her breathwork sessions guide participants into deep relaxation and self-discovery, and her cooking classes demystify the kitchen so that healthy eating becomes joyful and effortless. Through her published work, she offers practical tools for well-being, and through her retreats, she creates transformative, energizing experiences that catalyze profound, lasting change. Wow, that is a mouthful. Well, welcome, Kate. I'm so glad we connected.
I am, Philly. Thank you for having me.
So where do you want to start? I mean, that's a lot. Where do you want to start?
Maybe start at the end and move back.
Okay. That's people don't usually do that. I'm down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So right now you're leading retreats.
That's correct. Yes. I run between 2 and 4 retreats a year, and I run them in Portugal, France, Tuscany, and Scotland. That's the lineup for next year.
Okay.
And then when I'm not running retreats, I'm encouraging people to come away on a journey with the Breath Chef, which is online. And we meet once for an hour to do breath work and to find some joy in the kitchen.
So you combine that's therefore the Breath Chef. I wondered what fancy things you were doing with air.
That's it. Yeah. So air and the nutrients we eat. Inside the center of our cells, that's where everything gets transferred into energy.
Mm-hmm.
That keeps us alive. So my belief is that if we get that balance correct, then we can upgrade our energy levels.
So I have some questions right away.
Great.
So what do you encourage people to look at the air quality in the areas where they are? And what about sleep apnea?
Okay, I definitely think air quality is something to take into consideration. So if you do live in a congested area, then it's a good idea if you can, from time to time, get out into the mountain and get some good quality air, or mm-hmm. now there's some options to have air filters in your homes to filter out the air. And sleep apnea, I don't really want to comment on that because I don't feel that I'm qualified to comment. Mm-hmm. In that.
Right. Right. But do you have people get tested for it? I mean, it's such a, you breathe, you sleep a lot. And if you're not breathing right when you're sleeping, right?
Exactly. If you do suspect you have sleep apnea, it's very important to go and get that checked out. And there are ways to help it. Also, if you read James Nestor's book, Breathe, he's got a whole chapter about different techniques to improve your breathing.
It's just called Breathe, the book?
Yeah.
It's just called Breathe?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a really great insight, and it will change the way you think about breathing. For sure.
That seems crazy. I do a lot of that and I never think of it.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very enthusiastic about breathing. I had radical allergies at one point and I couldn't take any antihistamines because I'm actually allergic to those and I didn't know what to do. I went to a doctor, which is something I never do. And he sat there staring at me. And in an uncomfortable moment, I thought, what's he staring at? And he finally said, you're not breathing correctly. My nose was put out of joint at that point because I've been, you know, doing the pranayama breathing as part of yoga. And I thought, I mean, I'm not properly. Exactly. And I went away. He didn't prescribe anything, which I thought, okay, I'm going to pay heed to what you say. And I thought about it and I realized he was absolutely correct. I was breathing too much. I was taking in too much oxygen, breathing like a lot of us do in the stress world. And so I really started to pay attention to that. And well, the allergies cleared up, but the biggest side effect I had was that I just didn't have that knot of anxiety in me anymore. So I realized that there is so much to practicing breath work and to being disciplined to really get mindful about the way we breathe. It's the not living with anxiety anymore. And of course, no allergies has been a game changer for me.
So I don't know a lot about the breath work world. It sounds like I've had a lot of experience kind of where you're talking about, like within yoga practice and just in meditation and such. But like, what is the difference between soma breath work and like holotropic breath work? I know there's several different kinds.
Yes, and it's becoming very, very popular. So you're probably seeing it more now than you did ever before. The most important thing to know is that all breath work stem from ancient pranayama. It's thousands of years ago, and it was the yogis who were studying the animal kingdom, and they noticed that the larger animals took fewer breaths and lived longer, and the smaller animals took a lot more breaths and didn't live so long. So they realized as humans we could control it and hopefully increase our longevity and have a better well-being. And that's how it sort of came about. The modality I use is the soma breath technique. And the reason I love it is because it helps you to get into quite a relaxed meditative state without sitting and, you know, getting a numb bum, as I like to say, because it uses music.
Just got that numb bum. That's funny. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, it uses binaural beats music that helps to get your brainwaves into an alpha state to calm you down. Visualization, which we all know now, I mean, all the athletes use visualization, don't they, over and over when they're practicing to get the correct moves. So we all know that visualization will help us to achieve our goals or to acquire the life that we want to live. And then the breathing technique, which is rhythmic breathing followed by breath holds. And the reason you hold your breath is to increase the carbon dioxide, which transports the oxygen deeper into the areas where it needs to go. And that's called the Bohr effect, which comes from Christian Bohr many, many, many years ago when he discovered the effects of carbon dioxide and with oxygen.
That sounds, in my YouTube journeys, I have found people who do breath work and they say that it increases the amount of naturally occurring DMT in your system. And it sounds very much like kind of what you're talking, because it does, there are like fast breath, there's like a deep breath and you're holding it. Is there any correlation there?
Yes, actually. And Soma Breath had a study done, and I hope I'm correct, with Cambridge University, but I'm hoping
we can add it in the comment. It's in the comments. I'll double check it.
Where they did a big study and exactly that, the DMT story. So yes, it's a good article to read. And yes, that can happen.
Therefore Soma, right?
That's what the Soma did. They did a study together.
Right. No, I mean the word soma.
The soma, yes, is Greek for body. So, yeah, it's very much connecting with our bodies, which sadly, I think that in our modern life, we have moved away from. A lifetime of being told how to feel, what you should eat, how to behave, has made us sort of stop connecting with actually how do I feel?
Yeah. And so let's talk a little bit about like the food and the breath work together. So how did you, so do you have chef training or you just like did heavy research or how did you bring that aspect in?
So I fell into a chef role. It wasn't part of my plan. Well, wasn't part of my plan, but I guess
we'll talk about your plan in a little bit. Yeah.
And I did not do formal chef training. I did lots and lots of short courses, and I've got about 15 years of experience under my belt. I was working
5-0?
No, 1-5.
I was like, I don't think you're that old.
It's all the breathing and the eating.
Right. Yeah. Amazing. You're actually 85.
I was working on this luxury sailing yacht as a stewardess, and they wanted to sell the boat. So they said, okay, we're cutting the crew down. You can stay, but you have to start cooking. And so before I knew it, I got into the galley and came this passion for cooking. So they sent me off on all these courses to go and get trained. And that's how the chefing started. And I guess because I had an artist background, I just love the creativity of cooking and presenting the food and nourishing people. It was very, you know, a joyful experience for me. And then I took it one step further and started and studied as a health coach. So I looked at many different diets and I dove into nutrition and then I started to, yeah, just feel that, you know, if we eat correctly, we can, food is thy medicine, right? Isn't that it? So we could use it for so much more than just pleasure, you know, which of course we must get pleasure out of eating food. But what if you can use it in a way or use it to heal? So that's
I've got so many questions. So is health coach training different than dietitian training or does it include that training?
Okay, so it touches on lots of different diets, but it's not the same as if you're going to do 3 years of nutritional training, which goes very specifically into what the nutrients do and don't within the body, etc. So it's quite broad. And then you would find what your interest is, and then you'll sort of move deeper and then take your studies further if you wanted to.
That's your, I see. You hone in and become a specialist in one thing. That makes sense. So as somebody, we haven't gotten into your artistic background, but how do you end up getting a job as a stewardess on a luxury yacht? What is that? That's a very unusual path.
And a bit of a miracle, if I say, because when I had a big lifestyle change, so I was married for 17 years and everything fell apart. I left Haiti and then I was just lost. I was so lost and I didn't know what am I going to do. And I had this kind of vision of blue. I didn't know what it meant. But then somebody said, why don't you get a job on a boat? And so I started on this path and everybody said, you'll never get a job. You're far too old. They only take 20-year-olds. And I can't remember how old I was, in my late 30s then, or middle 30s. And I sort of just kind of thought it's not going to happen. And then somebody said, oh, my friend's a yacht captain. Why don't you have a cup of tea? And I went to have a cup of tea with him. And he said, oh, I've just taken on some crew. I'm so sorry. You're going to have to go and walk up and down the docks and just beg somebody to give you some day work, at which point my heart dropped. And the very next day he called me up and he said, could you come and meet me, please? He said, my crew member has just told me that they're leaving. If you could get to France on such a date, I've got a job for you. And that was it. And then I was in the middle of the ocean one day on watch. It was a beautiful, calm day. And I suddenly looked around and I get chills when I think about it. All I could see was blue. The sky and the sea meet and there's no horizon line. And I was literally in this bubble of blue. it's, yeah, mine, it was incredible.
That's beautiful. Hi, it's Karen. I wanted to remind you guys to go to Second Wind Women. That's really beautiful. Well, let's talk a little bit about, like, you said you were married for 17 years in Haiti. So you were you in Haiti for 17 years?
No, I was in for about 7 years in total, 6 years in total.
Mm-hmm.
But I did meet my husband then in Haiti when I was very, very young. And then we went to the UK where we did our art studies and had a little gallery and did various things before moving back to Haiti where we opened up an art center.
So when you were originally in Haiti, it didn't have anything to do with the art center. You were just visiting.
I was just visiting.
Okay.
Visiting my sister who had been living out there. And then I met
my
husband.
Cool. And where did you and your husband go to study art in the UK?
We went to Bath Spa University College, it's called, which is great, a very good college for conceptual art. So we got into the world of conceptual art. And then he went on to study at Central St. Martin's, but I stopped my studies at that point and started dreaming up ideas of art centers.
So how did you end up putting the art center in Haiti? How did you get funding to do the art center? What was like the final tip where you're like, I'm actually going to do this? That's like the sweet spot I want to know about.
The inspiration came because Haiti was known for its art and it sort of got devalued over the years because they had no fresh inspiration and it became more craft. And then we felt so privileged to have this art education. We thought, let's go and share it. And hopefully we can get the Haitian artists to a level where they can go out the country and then they can go and explore arts institutes if they want to take their education further. And then we hit the massive stumbling block that nobody would give them visas.
Yeah.
So we to then bring artists in to Haiti to come and share their knowledge in the country. But we also, my husband's parents were getting really old, so that's why we decided initially to go to Haiti. But then, of course, we just realized that, you know, we can offer something here. We can do something in it.
So he's from Haiti. Oh, okay, I didn't get that part.
Yes, he was, yeah. But grew
yeah,
up.
Yeah, when your parents get old.
Yeah, so that's how we sort of decided to go there.
So did you find that you made a difference with your art center as far as, you know, Haitian artists getting more exposure in the world at large?
Yeah, it was a really magical experience. It was phenomenal. And any artist that came to Haiti all had a phenomenal experience as well. Unfortunately, the earthquake destroyed the art center, destroyed the director who was running it. But what has happened since is lots of little seedlings have sprouted from that. And lots of artists still from time to time contact me. And the stories are just so heart moving, really. And I think it did make a difference that they had a space that they could flourish and learn from each other, learn through exchange, right? From teaching people who come outside in and those that come inside sharing what they know. And it's just such a beautiful way to grow as a community or as an individual as well.
What was the time frame where you had that center?
That was 5 years, and then it's 7 years before it got destroyed.
Oh, I meant like the years. Like,
that was in 2000. We first went and conjured up the plan, and then we went a year later or 2 years later, so around 2002, and then till 2007, we had, yeah.
Okay, cool. And what do you think, I mean, there was a movement for a while, I don't know if it's still happening, but probably in the early 2000s, there was a movement where they were showing folk art in galleries and they were really starting to pull that out. How does that work into the whole situation?
Yeah, that's so true, actually. So there were a few galleries in the United States that were doing, they were doing exhibitions around folk art or diaspora art. So the artists got lots, not lots, but they got opportunities to have their work exhibited. And some of them did actually get to travel.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so there were some opportunities for artists to get exposure and sell some of their work, because at the end of the day, they, you know, it's such a poor country, and they sell a painting, they feed, you know, their immediate family, but also their family all around. So
right.
We managed to hook them up with galleries and buyers as well. Yeah.
Amazing. That's so cool. That's amazing. And so it was the earthquake that was basically the moment where you were like, it's done.
I had left already, and that really, yeah, losing the director, just, I felt so traumatized. Already living in Haiti with all of the unrest was a lot. And when everything, that whole incident happened, I've not been able to go back since.
Yeah. That sounds really tough.
Yeah. There's no way now. It sounds like the Wild West there.
Or worse. Yeah. So let's go to the athlete training thing. So is your husband an athlete?
No.
Okay.
No.
You said supporting an athlete. So I was like, I just assumed.
No, I work for a top athlete. I nourish him, feed him.
Mm-hmm.
Follow him around from time to time, fueling him. So yeah, that's been such an insight to work with such a top sportsman, to get an insight into how important mindset is, how important fueling your body and taking care of yourself is, has really inspired me on my journey moving forward.
Yeah. And how did you, I mean, that seems, again, like I could see it work with the health coach thing, but with all of your background, how did you end up in that position, in that situation?
That was also a completely lucky arrival in my lap situation. Yeah, mm-hmm. I was for work and I got asked if I could go and cook for this client, and I wasn't even too sure who the client was initially, and then discovered I was working for an absolutely great, amazing person. And yeah, it was just, I got very lucky.
So you're still doing that in conjunction with your private coaching work and your retreats?
Yeah. Yes.
Busy.
Busy, yes. But I, in terms of the private chefing, I only have a couple of clients now that I work with.
And are you still doing any art?
I do, actually. Yeah, I do manage to squeeze a little bit of art in where I can and when I can. I ran a retreat with an artist this year, and it was all focused around art and reviving that artist child, not necessarily child, but the artist within you.
Yeah, anytime you talk about play, you can pretty much just, you know, substitute the word child, and everybody knows what you're talking about, right?
Yeah. Awakening that creative side is very important for us, because we're often living too much in our logical side, and, you know, left side of the brain, and we're too analytical and compartmentalize everything. And the more we tap into that other world, my goodness, it can really help us to problem solve better. It can help us to see things from different perspectives and again, tap into ourselves again, right? We were saying earlier about being disconnected. So
yeah. But if you're only breathing from like your collarbone up and you're eating crummy food, then you don't have the energy to do these things that make you happy, right?
That's exactly it. And that brings us back to the point of get those two, the balance correct, and have more energy. And then, oh my goodness, there's so many things you can do.
That's so cool. So what kind of art do you do?
I'm a painter and a printmaker. So
okay.
I lino print and etching. Very simple, fun process.
Is stuff. That the kind of work that you taught when you had your art center, or did you just, you brought in visiting artists?
Yeah. So I would enjoy teaching life drawing and printing techniques. And I think also techniques to help you to just let things come out and not be too constrained, which is interesting because printmaking is quite constrained. But there's also a time and a place, especially in the art center, where there was a lot of expressive creativity, you know, because there was no formal training. So
right.
It was very expressive.
I'm really curious because, you know, I have a lot of friends who are artists and theater people, and I come from that background. And there's such an emphasis in the United States on, like, why would you do or make this thing if it wasn't going to result in some income for you? It's a waste of time. You know what I'm saying? Like, art is considered a waste of time if it's not something that's going to blossom into something else. So how do you contend with that in a place like Haiti, where, you know, like, there is a real need?
Very interesting question. It's so, in Haiti, the crafts, the art was the tourist attraction, really.
Yeah.
It, for them, it was a means of making income. For others, it's such a burning desire that you just can't down, and you have to create. So that's very interesting. I've never thought so much about that. Yeah, in terms of myself, it would, of course, there was no money in it, and it was continual struggle to find funding.
Right.
Desire outweighed everything.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I was just thinking, like, you know, if you lived in Haiti and you could, like, I'm just making something up, so please don't take offense. Like, if you could just carve faces out of coconut shells all day, and people would buy that, and you could make money and you could feed your family, why would you want to go do conceptual art?
Well, yeah, exactly. But that's what was happening, is they were just painting, then placemats.
Right.
And
yeah.
Then once that's done and they made a bit of money, oh my gosh, would their canvas come out? And then they go off and start painting really expressive pieces. But the beautiful thing is that sometimes those sold as well. So it inspired them to keep pursuing that. But there were definitely two sides.
Yeah. You said you ran a small gallery when you were in the UK?
Selling Haitian art.
It was. So that was the stepping stone.
Yes, that was in partnership with somebody else who had an absolute love for Haitian art, and he wanted to bring it to the UK, and he did. And it was successful initially, yeah. But it's lonely.
It's unique. Sorry, what?
It gets lonely sitting in a gallery.
Yes, that's true. That's why they have to sell watches and jewelry and stuff like that in the gallery, so you can get people in there to buy little trinkets so they can look at everything. And so your employees probably don't just, you know, drink so much coffee that they can't even see.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So how do you work with people now, Kate? You said you're leading retreats and you're doing online. The Breath Chef is online.
That's an online journey that you can come along for 1 month, 3 months, or the whole year. Each month is inspired by a different country, and it's once a week for an hour. So I will do a breathwork session, or we will do a little cook along together. And then if you can't make it live, you get to watch the recordings. But it's just a nice way to set aside an hour of self-care. So that's one way I work with people. For more immersive experience, the retreats are definitely tops. You can't beat getting away and giving yourself some time to care for yourself, and let me nourish and nurture you for a few days so that you can do what you need to do to fuel your batteries. And then I do private coaching and private breathwork sessions, and time to time I'll do a little group session outside or inside, and some cooking workshops as well. But the cooking workshops are small. I work with small little intimate groups.
And those are in person, right?
Those are in person, yeah. And then the one-on-one is great if you really, if you have something specific you want to work on or a goal to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
One-on-one you can't beat, obviously.
So where are you located? I didn't even ask you, Kate. Where are you located?
I'm living in the south of France at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're a very different time zone than I am.
Yes, it's 5:45 now.
Amazing. I want to look up some of your, I want to look up, what's your website?
It's called gowiththeglow.com.
Go with the glow.
Yes. That's about to be revamped.
Yes.
I'm excited for that, but you can still see the retreat offerings on there. And then if you want to work with me personally, that's Kate Tarrant Cross.
Okay. Okay, great. And when you do your cooking things, is it vegetarian? Is it omnivore? Do you have any specific protocol that you follow?
I do mostly vegetarian. Yes. I'm going to say yes for the vegetarian, and that's not because I'm opposed to animal protein. I am mostly vegetarian myself, but I believe we're all very different. Some of our bodies thrive on eating animal protein is what I'm trying to say.
Mm.
Others don't. So I just try to really highlight all the benefits of plant-based and vegetarian eating. And then if you want to have a little side dish of animal protein to do that. But everything is really tailored around making it easy, making it fun, because if it's easy and fun, you're more likely to do it. And just getting people comfortable with cooking from intuition and experimenting and finding way in the kitchen.
Yeah. And seriously, almost nobody eats enough vegetables except for vegetarians.
And you can get all your nutrients from plants, but you have to be interested in nourishing yourself if you wanted to take a sort of strict vegan diet or whatever. So if people do want to have specific diets, I can help them and show them ways to nourish themselves and cook. I've got lots of experience with plant-based foods and plant-based cooking, so, and gluten-free and all the things that, you know,
there's so many. Yeah, that's wild. Yeah, I am as part of my, so I went to school and I got a master's degree in Buddhist studies, and yes, and part of the experience was we had to do a month-long meditation, so we had to go to this retreat center and three meals a day. Communal meals. We're passing along bowls. You take out what you want. Like, that's it. And then that was your chance, you know? And it was so interesting how everybody was like, people didn't feel like they were getting enough just because it came and you got it and that was it, you know? Cause we're so used to having like these big, you know, options for food, lots of, you know, take as much as you want or whatever. And it came out, at least one of the teachers there said, like, the number one way that people's neurosis comes out is through their relationship with food.
Right. So that's because, so interesting.
Right? Because how much do you value yourself? How much are you taking? Are you like, oh, I feel like I need a whole bunch? Are you like denying yourself? It's so, there's so many dynamics.
That's so fascinating.
Yeah.
Wow. A whole month, you must have had so much insight after that.
You know, it was great. And we had there was a week, we did a silent week. So it was no talking except for like, you know, hey, there's a snake on your foot. No, not that there were snakes around, but you know, like it was like functional talking, like you're going to spill that, you know. So, but nobody was like, oh, I was wondering about, you know, how these plants are growing. So it was incredible and like very, very, very calming. And I remember when the week was over and they were like, okay, the week is over. And so many people were like, you know, like they had been holding in all this stuff for the whole week. And I was like, I was actually like really hesitant to talk because I found it so, I don't know if I would say profound, but like such an opportunity to focus on my experience rather than how I was going to talk about, you know, relate that experience to somebody else.
Yeah. Wow. Would you do it again?
Yeah. My kids are old enough now. I'd do it again. Yeah, I would. Yeah, it was really amazing. That's a whole, I should do a podcast on myself.
Yeah, I was going to say, can I interview you?
Find somebody to interview me. Well, awesome. Thank you so much for joining us, Kate. It was like such a pleasure to talk to you. And I will put the link to your websites in the notes. And I hope people get in touch with you because I think that's just breathing and food together is like really, that's really amazing.
Thank you so much, Karen. It's been an absolute pleasure. So I really appreciate you having me on your show today.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your openness and your willingness to share your story. It's amazing and inspiring and says a lot about mindset and, you know, like I want to work on a luxury boat. How's that going to happen? Cool. Yeah. Well, thank you, Kate.
Thank you, Karen.